When the sun sets and the twilight settles, we're left with only darkness and whatever lurks within it. Good evening, everyone, and welcome. I'm your host, Maria Segura, and you're listening to Seattle Public Radio at 1 in the morning. And tonight we continue with Elder Sign's second chapter, The Black Pillar, starring Jasmine Jang as Hazel Blair and Anthony Mendoza as Jason Reed, featuring narration performed by David Zybert. And now, a recap of Elder Sign's last episode.
Last time on Elder Sign, Hazel revealed the Elder Tome to Jason, who was shocked when she took him to the remains of Mrs. Allen. After a long night, both Hazel and Jason were called to a protest-turned-riot led by environmental activist Patrick Sutherland. After interrogating the man at the protest site, they learned that an activist, Daisy, started the riot and she ran into the woods. Searching the forest for the fleeing activist, the two found clothes in a large pool of blood in the shadow of a large black pillar. Now back to Chapter 2, The Black Pillar.
My son, heed my words. I have seen the heralds of our world's destruction, their tendrils descending from the swirling heavens. I have seen the long-forgotten gods and evils that lie in wait for their callings. I have seen the darkened minions that plot in the depths of our world, their counterparts drifting toward us through the cosmic void. Protect yourself, my son. Always remember the Elder Sign. Several hours had passed between the discovery of the spire in the forest and the blocking off of the most recent crime scene. Forensics scoured the dirt for evidence, placing the bloodied, ripped clothes into evidence bags for further analysis. As the sun was beginning to set over the trees, uniformed officers continued to search the forest, looking for a naked and possibly injured young protester. As the officers patrolled the woods, Davis stood with his arms crossed looking over the strange black pillar, his eyes tracing the uniquely bizarre symbols. The sounds of footsteps behind him broke his trance, and he turned to see Jason and Hazel stepping into the clearing. Jason approached Davis's side without hesitation, but Hazel stopped to watch forensics bag the blood-soaked clothing. She watched as the tattered clothes were zippered and placed carefully on the ground, her thoughts imagining what could have happened to Daisy in this clearing only hours ago.
Didn't find anything during your sweep?
No, Sergeant. We walked the tree line where the construction equipment is, thinking she'd have maybe made her way back. We didn't find anything.
How about you?
I didn't see anything.
If there were tracks or blood or practically anything, Hazel would have followed them. Kind of a good thing you're here. Your tracking experience could help find Daisy alive if someone finds anything.
Good to know my grandfather dragging me out to the woods in Kenai to track and kill helpless animals has really paid off.
I've instructed the King County sheriffs and the Bellevue officers to continue sweeping the entire area for at least a mile. If Daisy's here, we'll find her.
Good. Honestly, she shouldn't have gotten too far with how much blood she's lost. She's probably weak and very vulnerable. Hopefully they'll find her soon.
Yeah, that is the idea. Do we have any idea what this thing is?
The pillar? No, we don't.
Could be Indian. Skagit, Swinomish, Tulalip, you name it. Could be any of theirs.
Whatever this thing is, it's weird.
Good to see we finally agree on something.
Surprised none of the local tribes reported something like this to the city before construction. Something like this could be important to a tribe. Maybe even delay or halt construction period. I can check with R&I to see if any of the local tribes know anything about this if you think it's even relevant.
No, don't bother the station with this crap. Simply coincidence that Daisy's clothes were dropped here. I've just never seen anything like this before.
I mean, Alaskan and Canadian tribes made those giant stone men as landmarks or something, but they never made anything like this.
The Inuksuk. I remember hearing about those when I lived in Vancouver.
Yeah, but like I said, those were used for hunting or traveling. This is more like some kind of... I don't really know what this is.
It kind of looks like an obelisk. Those pillars you hear about in Egypt? Those were used for worship. Do you think these were too?
Lousy place to put an altar. And no tribes were known to ever live near here, so what purpose would there be in building an altar when no one's going to use it?
And this thing is certainly not used for hunting or tracking. It provides literally no landmark significance. There's no game trails, no rivers, and like Davis said, there were no other tribes nearby. Honestly, I don't know what it's used for, or why it's out in the middle of a forest.
It's strange, but let's remember, we're here looking for the owner of the blood and clothes.
Well, no need to wonder who they belong to. Clearly, the clothes are Daisy's. Female brands, all in petite sizes.
But she wouldn't just rip her clothes off for no reason, especially if she were injured and bleeding. That's the thing that doesn't make any sense to me.
Maybe she was on something. Those freaks we sent away may have been holding.
That's a strong possibility.
What about the blood? Do you think she was so high she fucking gave herself compound fractures to both arms?
All right, Ms. Blair. Let's hear your theory.
The reason for the injury? Maybe a fall. She could have easily tried climbing over one of those fallen trees and broke something on the way down if she weren't careful.
But someone would have seen the blood and been able to follow it back here.
True. Well, then there could have been an injury during the protest. Lanley says she ran up and busted out his truck window. Broken glass could have caused the injury and this amount of blood if she severely cut herself on some.
Yeah, but why are the clothes ripped?
Fabric ripped on a strong branch when she ran through the forest. Easy.
The clothes are ripped to shreds. You expect me to believe she ripped her clothes on a branch?
What about an animal? That would explain the blood and the ripped clothes.
There's no evidence of big game predators anywhere near here.
But bears sometimes move out of their general hunting areas to find food. Maybe a lone bear came through and attacked her right here in the clearing.
That's as good a theory as the broken leg or glass cuts, Blair.
But if there were an animal attack, there'd be evidence of an intense struggle and animal tracks. I see none of those things. It makes more sense that she seriously injured herself during the riot or while rushing through the forest. Reason why the blood is so heavy here is because she probably stopped to rip her clothes, voluntarily, to bandage or tourniquet the wound.
That does make sense.
Yeah, but if she left this clearing, we'd see evidence of it. Her trail ends here in front of the pillar. So unfortunately, these theories mean shit until we find a body.
A body? Wait, you think she's dead?
With the amount of blood on the ground, any rookie beat cop would see that she's in critical condition. We've been searching for hours, and we found nothing. If we don't find her in the mile radius I instructed, then she exerted herself beyond physical ability and collapsed. Blood loss initiates shock, siphoning blood away from the organs to maintain the heart and brain. Exhaustion leads to collapse and unconsciousness, meaning she couldn't treat herself. The shock and blood loss she's maintained means the eventual loss of oxygen to the brain, which ends in... what?
Death.
Yes, read death.
So then what should we call this?
It's a missing persons case. That's what we put in the report. I don't want any other speculation from the city, station, or press about this until we have the girl's body found. Understand?
Yes, sir.
God, how can you be so fucking pessimistic, Davis? And how can you just fucking allow him to assume she's now nothing but a corpse?
Hazel, the sergeant's right. We're looking at higher chances of her being dead than alive with the amount of blood alone.
For all we know, she could be out there, alone, clinging to life. She doesn't have to be dead.
Hazel, I know it's been a while since you've dealt with real police work, so let me give you a quick summary of what us real detectives see here. She was either injured previously or injured herself. Severely. Here alone, we're looking at a pint of blood. She's petite, so she's maybe 115 pounds. So that pint would have triggered hypovolemic shock. Without treatment within the first 3 hours, she'd be dead. It's been far more than 3 hours, so we need to assume she's dead. With the amount of blood spatter found right here, I'm surprised she made it more than a few hundred feet before she bled out. The fact she hasn't been found yet is a goddamn mystery unto itself. Now enough with this. It's getting late, and it's clear you two are exhausted. We'll search for a couple more hours before it gets dark and then start again in the morning. Understand?
Yes, sir. And thanks. To be honest, we could use the sleep. I'll take Hazel home and we'll both speak with you in the morning.
I'll be expecting a call. 7 sharp.
Yes, sir. I'll talk with you then. Come on, Hazel.
Sleep descended upon Hazel as they drove back to the city. Neither of them had gotten any sleep in almost 32 hours, leaving them completely exhausted. Now, Hazel slept, her mind accepting the black ichor of dream, unaware of where her sleep may take her. At first, Hazel was drifting alone in a starless void, her incorporeal body flowing through the passages of time and space. Then, there was a single light, like the twinkle of a distant star. Slowly, she saw the light grow in size, the light growing brighter with each passing moment. She couldn't blink, for in this strange, unfamiliar form, she had no eyelids, or eyes for that matter. She was simply a lost consciousness, floating ever closer to this light in the darkness. Eventually, it became apparent to Hazel that this wasn't just a small light. This light was simply far away, for as she got closer, the beams of white began to slowly engulf the astral abyss. It also became clear that Hazel wasn't drifting. She was speeding forward, moving at a pace that her conscious mind could never truly understand. By this time, the light had become blinding, but she could not look away. She kept flying ever closer to what lay beyond. After moments of staring into the mind-numbing rays, she found herself now staring down off a cliff, looking into the distance. The horizon she looked upon was strange and alien. The sky was a sickly pink, gray clouds drifting through the air above. The ground below her was a shade of red, a shade unseen to humans for centuries. Below the pink sky, miles from the cliff where she stood, and built atop the red dirt, were ancient black pyramids. Glistening in the distance were five obsidian pyramids, which resembled the structures built by the Maya or Aztec. They were huge, the center pyramid surrounded by the four others, each pillaring up to grace the sky. Leading away from the collection of pyramids was a smoothed-over path that ended at a huge obelisk, one designed and shaped much like the one they had found in the forest. As she heard the shrill cries of some distant animal, Hazel watched as the world around her began to fade. Light stretched around her as colors wavered and warped, dissipating as Hazel's subconscious mind faded from this distant reality. Next, Hazel found herself in a room, her bare feet pressed against cold concrete. The room was a dull black, the only light coming from a square window built into a black metal door. She didn't dare look outside the window for fear of what she might have seen, and instead looked down at her own hands. They were covered in grime and caked blood, her fingertips crusted over with green and yellow scabs. She wore a white tank top with white panties, the top covered in streaks of blood and gray dust. Her eyes then lifted up toward the concrete walls, her breath catching in her throat when she saw what the walls held. Upon their rough gray surface were drawings and text written in dried blood. Symbols graced every inch of concrete, and she recognized faces drawn on the walls. Written in large, crooked script were the words, "Don't trust them."
Hazel?
Her eyes flashed open to see Jason, a concerned look on his face as he drove his car through the streets of Seattle's urban jungle. Hazel was slumped in the passenger seat, and she turned her gaze to the approaching evening sky. As the sun began to set over the sea, the sky was a magnificent meld of orange and pink, reminding her of the horizon, of that distant dream world.
You okay?
What?
Are you okay? You fell asleep as soon as we entered Bellevue. A couple minutes later, you started flailing around and saying stuff.
What stuff?
I couldn't really understand you. You kept mumbling as you tossed and turned. I thought I should wake you up, stop whatever nightmares you were having.
Yeah. Thanks.
No problem.
So, I was wondering, you said something about a trinity?
Yeah, the holy trinity?
Well, I was thinking that the whole unholy trinity idea maybe does have some significance or connection to Mrs. Allen. I remember her saying some names I recognized during the ritual. Azrael, Beelzebub, and another, Yog-Sothoth. Do you know about those at all?
Well, Azrael isn't really in Christianity at all. He isn't a demon or angel recognized by the Catholic Church, so I don't know much about him. Beelzebub is another name for the Lord of Flies, a prince of hell and servant of Satan. and I have no idea what the heck Yog-Sothoth is. I've never heard of that before, and I hope I never hear about it again.
Can you think of any connection between the two that you do know, then? Maybe there's something we can use to connect with this Yog-Sothoth thing and figure
out... Hazel, can we not talk about this? Like, at all. I know I said I'd help a little, but right now I'd just not like to think about it. I'm exhausted, and still not all right after everything that's happened today.
Well, what about this case? The missing environmentalist?
What about it?
Don't you think that it's a little weird that there's a huge black stone pillar in the middle of the forest?
See, no. I don't really want to think about the possibility that it's something horribly awful and not just a weird pillar in the middle of a forest. I don't want to think or be a part of it. With luck, tomorrow Davis will just assign you and me to something more practical and less weird.
What? But this case could be something. Something that the Elder Tome can help us with.
See, that's exactly the reason I don't want to be a part of it. It's weird enough that there's a creepy pillar in the middle of nowhere. But it's even weirder that this happens right after Mrs. Allen's suicide.
What? You don't think it's connected?
God, I hope not. Like I said, I'm going to call Davis tomorrow and ask to be assigned another case, no matter what. Because, Hazel, I can't be a part of this. And frankly, I don't think you should either.
What do you mean?
I mean, it's one thing to be interested in all this, all the weird occult things and all that fun stuff. But it's another thing to be diving into this head on. What if this is all like a Ouija board?
Like a Ouija board?
You know, how you use a Ouija board and that opens a doorway to spirits. Usually the ones that come through are the bad ones. What if you finding this book just set off everything? Open a door to those weird things that are in the book. Like some sort of beacon or something. First Mrs. Allen, now the obelisk.
You can't honestly think this pillar in the forest is connected to Mrs. Allen's ritual. She never mentioned anything about a pillar or anything like that. It's just a coincidence. I'm pretty sure it's statistically impossible that they have anything to do with each other.
More impossible than what's written in that book?
Jason, you may not be interested in what's happening with the pillar, but I am. This is also... It's goddamn fascinating. I mean, it's something no one knows about, something only a few people even know exists, something only we can learn about and fix. Doesn't that interest you, even a little?
It scares me more than interests me.
I just haven't felt like this since I was on the force. The adrenaline, the investigating, the mystery, the fear while on the job. Like I said, it's like I was called to this. It's almost as if Daniel Bledin wrote the Elder Tome knowing I would find it and use it. Sure, I was a little shaken by Mrs. Allen too, but now I'm more focused on finding their group and uncovering what secrets they have. Maybe stopping something like what happened to the Allens before it's too late. It's exhilarating.
Yeah. What you're feeling is what I'm worried about. Here's your building. You want me to pick you up tomorrow?
No, it's fine. My car is actually just out of the shop. They left it in the parking lot, so I'll just grab it while I'm awake now.
All right. I'll call you tomorrow. Give you the details if Davis assigns us a new case. I'll also call the Bellevue County Sheriff. Leave a tip about, you know.
Yeah. Get some sleep, Jason. I'll see you tomorrow.
Sure. See you then. I recommend you take your book.
Yeah. Thanks.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Weekends are a good time to listen to podcasts. Unless the weekend begins with Friday the 13th. Return to Camp Blood is Jason's podcast, and no one will be left alive. Join Chris, E, Eric, and Oz as they return to Camp Blood every Friday night at CampBloodPodcast.com. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show wherever you listen, or you'll find yourself the latest victim of Jason's wrath.
And now, back to the show.
Hazel began her walk down the street when Jason pulled away from the curb. As she walked, book in hand, Hazel contemplated what her next step was going to be on this case. Even if Jason didn't want any part of the case, Hazel knew that Daisy's life could be in danger. She had to do all she could. After obtaining her car, Hazel drove to South Seattle, to the University District. Parking her car, Hazel began her walk through the campus, heading toward the university's extensive library. The night air was brisk, but even at this late hour, Hazel pushed herself, taking the Elder Tome in hopes she could cross-reference it with anything she could find. Entering into the library, Hazel approached the counter where a young student worker sat, looking down at the book he read.
Hello there.
Oh, hello there. Can I see your Husky card?
No, but this is my private investigator's license. I'm working on a case and I'd like to use the library. You're the only ones open this late.
Yes, of course. Go ahead inside.
Thank you.
Collapsing her wallet, Hazel stepped into the sparsely attended library and began her search. She stepped into the local history section, pulling books she thought would have some take on the mysterious Black Pillar. Collecting as many as she could hold, Hazel took her selections to a table. She began her reading, searching for mention of any sort of object known in Washington or anywhere in the world. After a few minutes of reading, Hazel heard footsteps behind her. Her gaze left the book, and she turned to see an older native Alaskan man wearing a nice sweater and black dress pants.
Hello there, miss.
Oh, hello.
Pardon me. I couldn't help but notice you grabbed a book on Native American culture. Are you taking a class on it, or is it just an interest?
I wouldn't call it an interest as much as I would call it necessary reading. My name is Hazel Blair. It's nice to meet you.
Ethan Shimanek, professor in Native American history and anthropology.
Native American history? What a coincidence.
There are never any coincidences, miss. In my experience, there's only fate. I'm here to find readings for my students this coming semester. Best to be prepared for what's to come, in my opinion.
Strange time to come looking for course material.
Not at all. It's quieter at night than during the day. Much less crowded as well. And I like the sense of serenity I find walking through the library at night.
It certainly is calm.
I stopped my lesson planning when I saw you collecting so many texts on Native Americans. May I ask, are you a student studying Native Americans? I've never seen you in any of my classes.
Oh, no, I'm not a student. I'm actually working with the police on a case.
That case involves Native American culture?
Well, honestly, I didn't know I was grabbing all that much on Native Americans. I thought this was all information about this area.
Well, almost all of those books contain information on Native Americans. This stretch of land was populated by many small tribes for hundreds of years.
Well, and the reason I'm looking through these books is also kind of stupid, because I'm looking for a specific object, or, well, mention of the object. But I don't really know anything about it, really, other than it resembles something like an Egyptian monument or something.
An obelisk?
Yeah, that's what they're called. It's this big black rectangular pillar in the middle of some woods north of here. It kind of looks like that monolith in 2001 A Space Odyssey.
I see. Do you mind if I sit?
No, of course not.
Thank you, Miss Blair. What you describe, this black obelisk, it resembles a description to something the Yupik once called Nashiman.
I really don't know what any of that is. Who are the Yupik?
An Alaskan native people, Miss Blair.
So the Yupik made these pillars? The Nashiman? Is that what you're saying?
Oh no, the Yupik people didn't make these devices.
Devices?
Yes. It is said, long ago, when the native peoples crossed over to this continent, that many found these great altars.
Wait, they found them? Just like, lying around?
No, these devices were already standing when the people crossed the land bridge. You see, they had been already made for the people. For man's arrival was foreseen.
Foreseen? Wait, so if the natives didn't make them, then who did?
The Pawnee Indians say that the great god Tirawa, father of men, placed these pillars across the western coast of the North and South Americas. However, while many cultures claim different creators, all claim the pillars provide the same purpose.
Well, what purpose is that?
all tribes that know of a sacred altar such as the one you describe claim that they are the doorways to the gods, a gateway to heaven and earth, forever connecting them. Stories told by storytellers from generation to generation claim that tribesmen and gods would commune at these pillars. The gods commanded the tribes to provide their greatest scholars, and in return, the gods would protect the tribe for another cycle.
Wait, another cycle?
Yes. You see, the people of the West Coast, even the Incas, wrote that a cycle's end occurred when the planet, our moon, and the star of the gods were aligned. At the beginning of a new cycle, the gods would arrive. Peruvian tribes called these gateways stargates, large doors to the land of the gods. When the star aligned with our mortal world, the gods would arrive for a brief period in the day, but only for a brief period. Then, when the star was visible during the night, the gods would call their chosen to join them.
Professor, how long is there between these cycles?
Well, there is only two recorded dates of these events, each spanning the course of about a 500 years.
Oh, fuck.
I beg your pardon?
Sorry, Professor, but I really have to go. It's been nice talking to you, but I need to go.
Oh, well, it was my pleasure.
Hazel rushed through the library, her hand rummaging through her pockets.
Where is my phone? God damn it! Those things that made the pillars are what caused the blood splatter! Please don't be asleep. Please don't be asleep. Please don't... Jason, it's me. I know you're probably asleep, but I really need you to listen. Look, the pillar, it's not connected to Mrs. Allen at all. It's not some stupid bullshit demonic thing like she was, Jason. It's some kind of portal or something. Something came through earlier today and took that protester, Daisy, back with them. Jason, it's supposed to be happening again tonight. It's all part of some kind of cycle. Something's coming through the pillar. I'm heading to the forest right now. I know you don't want anything to do with this, Jason, but I need you to be there with me. Please, if you can, find me at the forest. Hopefully I'll see you there. Where's the book? Here. Okay. Na Shaman. There it is.
The Na Shaman are huge pillars made from what appear to be obsidian rock, standing from 10 to 20 feet tall. We have determined that the objects are indeed of alien origin, placed here before man walked the earth by malicious beings from a distant place. We first discovered the Na Shaman while in Canada, in the Nunavut. My party and I were following reports of gaunt creatures standing 10 feet tall that howled in the night. As we trekked across the island of Cornwallis, we came across a small group of people calling themselves the Inunavut. There were only about 20 of them, and they lived isolated from the others on the island by securing buildings towards the island's center. Finding ourselves exhausted and starving, we took refuge with the people, who offered us food and shelter out of generous hospitality. My partner asked if there had been any strange occurrences towards the center of the island, such as howls or footprints that circled their small village. They laughed and apologized, but they couldn't tell us if what they called the White Ones dwelled nearby. They were protected by the will of their ancestors, who only settled this desolate place because the gods willed it. Old gods, who they say roamed the earth eons before anything else ever did, left behind altars for mortals to find. The altar, they continued, was only a mile away in a small canyon near a frozen lake. The White Ones feared the old gods and their powers, so they steered far away from the altar, sticking close to the sea. Intrigued, I and my fellows set out the next morning to find the altar, which they called Inunk.
We skied across the snow to the location given to us by the Inunavut, a canyon that was carved deep into the tundra. As we approached, we also found the remains of huts and other tools, possibly dating back almost a century or two. I remember looking upon this desolate village, which was in tatters due to the centuries of bad weather, and wondering to myself, what gods did these people truly worship? Down into the canyon we went, taking in our surroundings with awe. Water had run down the rocky walls and had frozen into amazing displays, the ice glistening in the sunlight. But as we drew closer to this altar, we felt a collective feeling of dread. Deeper we went, noticing how the rock behind the sparkling ice grew darker and darker in color. It was as we were nearing the end of our walk that my partner pointed up along a wall facing our left. Warped and twisted by the ice was a tribal drawing. It was painted upon the wall in crude white paint and only visible due to the clarity of the ice, which in turn also protected the art. What was described on the wall was a procession of villagers, drawn as stick figures, raising their arms towards three beings that were clearly not from this universe. They were taller than the villagers, standing at an estimate of 9 to 10 feet tall. Their bodies were shaped like triangles, fat at the base, pointed at the tip. Their faces were plastered onto their bodies, two pairs of dull, oval-shaped eyes, three slits below them, and a set of thick, fat lips. At the base of the body were four stumps, which were more than likely the legs of these gods. They had no arms that we could see, only three long strands of tendrils that wavered off the body. There were only two drawings of these creatures, one of their arriving, a sun above both the tribe and the creatures, one of what we assume to be a second arrival, with only one creature arriving to visit the tribe, a moon hanging above them. It was then that we heard the whispers of the canyon, deep, alien words that drifted in the dark corners of our minds. We left behind the wall art and followed the dark musings to their source. There we found it, the altar the people called the Inunk. It was a huge pillar, carvings sizzled perfectly into its frame. The whispers we knew was the pillar's response to the elder god's magic, which we wore around our necks. We felt the fear it and its creators had for the elder gods, but felt something else, something much stronger, hate. We copied the symbols carved flawlessly into the pillar and left, hoping that we could figure out what these were and their purpose. The symbols upon the pillar meant nothing. Nothing we could understand, at least, and after months of investigating into the origin of the pillar, all we learned were bits and pieces of information, scattered amongst the different tribes, each with centuries and entire land masses between them. First was a name, Na Shamin. Then, over the months, came the piecing together of their purpose. They were, and very well still may be, gates for these beings to travel through, allowing them to move through time, space, and reality with ease. They would demand a sacrifice, a wise man who would travel with them back to their plane of existence. After these significant events, early tribes and civilizations would prosper, advancing tenfold. How? I don't know. But it is my belief that the advancements of the specific cultures that had mention of these pillars and the so-called gods are very much connected. As I write this, I wonder still, what purpose do these gateways truly serve? Why are these things interested in us? What is the significance of these pillars' locations? I wonder if we'll ever know. I suppose, when the stars align once more, we may learn the secrets to these things, these black pillars.
fucking great. Some portal opens after hundreds of years, takes some lady protester, and now the portal is opening again tonight. Now, I'm rushing there with less than an hour of sleep to save Daisy and stop them from coming back through. Not the smartest thing I've done, but 2 weeks ago I did attack someone willing to shoot me with a chair. Let's fucking finish this.
Hazel drove through the streets, rushing toward the construction site where the protester, Daisy, was last seen. As she drove, she forced herself awake, driven by the urge to save Daisy and stop whatever was to come. Finally, she arrived at the site, swerving to the side of the road and rushing to exit her car, grabbing the Elder Tome to take with her.
I have to get to the pillar before it opens. The book said these things are afraid of something called the Elder Gods. Maybe there's something in the book that'll help me stop the portal from opening. Who's there? Whoever it is behind the bulldozers, come out right now! I'm only gonna repeat this once, shithead. Come out with your hands up, or I swear to God I'll come back there myself. I've got a taser, and don't think I won't goddamn shoot
okay,
you.
Okay, okay.
Patrick? What are you doing here? I thought we told you to stay out of here. The protests are over.
I'm not just going to sit and watch these trees get destroyed. Daisy was right. We need to take action or else everything we've worked for will mean nothing.
Look, Patrick, I respect what you're doing. I do. But I need you to come with me. Something's going on and I need
you. I'm not going anywhere. Especially with someone working with the cops. You're going to do to me what you did to Daisy. Take her away and make it seem like nothing's happened. That she's just missing.
What the fuck are you talking about?
You took her. I know you did. You cops are just the puppets of a fascist society gone wrong. All you do is watch us and snuff out those that want to make the world different than your own twisted image.
Okay, I need you to listen to me, you fucking idiot. You need to get in your car and drive away. I won't tell anyone you were here. I won't arrest you. Just go. I'm trying to help you and Daisy, not hurt you.
Help us? You're just going to arrest me, just like you did Daisy. That's why I haven't seen her. Because you pigs detained her and are refusing to let her speak with anyone.
Daisy isn't with the police, Patrick.
Then fucking prove it.
Listen, Daisy is going to be back in Seattle tomorrow.
Bullshit.
And you can see her then, okay? But right now you need to get in your car, wherever the hell it is, and get out of here, all right?
Why? What are you hiding? What's so important that I need to leave?
I'm not hiding anything from anyone. I need you to wrap your little X-Files conspiracy theory head around this, okay? Help yourself by getting in your car and just leaving. I promise, I won't even say you were here. Jason.
You lying pig. You called backup. I knew it!
Patrick, listen, don't run into the forest. It's dangerous. Stop! Shit, fucking shit!
Hazel ran after Patrick into the forest, branches and twigs colliding with her body and head. She couldn't see in front of her, the moonlight hidden behind the branches and leaves. She could only follow the sound of Patrick's rushing steps as she tripped over her own feet in the dark.
Patrick! Patrick!
Hazel?
Over here!
Hazel pressed on, running deeper and deeper into the forest. Eventually, she heard the footsteps of Patrick slow to a stop. But she continued.
Patrick, head towards me. No one wants to hurt you, I promise. Just head back towards me.
Hazel burst through the trees, entering into the clearing. Collapsing to the ground, the Elder Tome flew from her reach and slid into the dark of the woods.
Ah, fuck! Holy shit.
Hazel looked up from the cold ground, only to see something that made her jaw drop. Before her stood Patrick, his back to her. And past his form was a sinister wall of hollow black. The pillar was no longer just that, a pillar. It was now a towering black void that seemed to extend far into the sky and was now as wide as the clearing. Patrick simply stared deep into the wavering abyss, a portal to the beyond.
Patrick! Patrick, I need you to listen to me. Step away from that and follow me. We're going to just walk back to the construction site, all right? Talk about all of this.
Can you not hear her?
Hear who? Who am I supposed to be hearing?
Daisy. I can hear her. She's just past the store.
Patrick took a step closer to the wall of darkness, outstretching his hand as if to reach something that was just beyond his grasp.
Daisy?
Patrick, listen to me. We have Daisy. You were right. We had her and we just lied to you. If you come back with me, we can take you to her, I promise.
No, I can't. I can hear her. She's just past this...
Hazel watched as Patrick's outstretched hand touched the dark barrier separating our world from whatever twisted realm lurked beyond. There was an apparent ripple on the void as Patrick's palm pressed up against it, like a pebble colliding with water. Now the portal wavered, like its surface wasn't solid at all, but some sort of murky black fluid. Patrick was silent at first, but then there was a noise. From his palm were wisps of simmering skin, his flesh burning upon the grand fluid darkness before him.
God! Oh, God! Help me! Help me! Oh, my God! Help me!
Suddenly, three pink strands pierced through the other side of the portal, extending themselves from beyond time and space. They wavered like thin wisps before quickly flinging themselves at Patrick. One went for Patrick's neck, the pink tendril coiling tightly around his flesh, causing Patrick to gasp for air as it tightened around his esophagus. The second went for Patrick's left forearm, coiling around him like the body of a thin snake. It tugged at his arm, pulling him closer toward the doorway to their world. The third and final strand went straight for his right wrist, the hand that was already burning upon the fluid void. The three tendrils from beyond began to tug and pull Patrick, who struggled to fight against the terrifying creature just behind the pillar's portal.
Patrick! Patrick, I'm coming!
Wrapping her arms around Patrick's waist, Hazel began to pull against the might of the monsters. She looked up and saw that she could actually see through the rippling portal. The images were hazy, blurred so much so that all she could see were forms, colors, and shadows. Just behind the gateway was a tall, triangular-shaped creature. Its body was nothing but a dark shadow, but four unblinking red eyes stared back through the transparent ichor at her. Behind this solitary being were two others, waiting until their second victim was completely through before stepping in to assist. Looming just beyond the three creatures was the shape of a tall black pyramid extending up toward a pink sky. There was another forceful tug from the fleshy tendrils, the physical abomination standing completely stationary as the coiled feelers did their work. Hazel gritted her teeth and dug her heels into the dirt.
I'm not going to let them take you! I won't let that happen!
Oh, God.
Slowly, the tentacles pulled Patrick's right arm through the fluid portal, his skin sizzling as it did so. Blood seeped from his burned, oozing flesh into his clothes, which would not pass through the portal as Patrick's flesh did.
Oh, God! Help me! Please!
Though Patrick twisted and contorted his body, the behemoth's strength proved too great. In a matter of moments, his entire left and right arm were through to the other side, his chest now pressing against the burning surface of the portal. Hazel continued to pull with all her might against the creature's strength, sweat beading down her forehead as she, too, neared the monsters beyond.
No!
He screamed as his face began to touch the rippling void. His nose and hair sizzled and popped as his body was burned to a crisp. His eyes rolled back into his head, and his mouth neared the ichor.
No!
Hazel, still struggling against the beast, saw his waist and her arms begin to drift close to the portal. She bit her lip, her fingers digging into the flesh of his waist that hadn't passed through just yet. She felt the warm blood trickle down her fingers as her wrists and arms shook against the force of the beast. Taking in a deep breath, she closed her eyes, forcing herself to do what had to be done.
I'm sorry.
Against her natural instinct, Hazel released Patrick from her grasp, allowing the monsters from beyond time and space to fully take him, abducting him into whatever hell waited beyond the pillar. While his flesh quickly passed through the strange fluid surface, his clothing did not, all articles of fabric falling to the ground, bloody and ripped.
I'm sorry.
Hazel, what happened?
I couldn't.
Couldn't what? Hazel, where's Sutherland? What was that noise just then?
I couldn't. He's gone. They took him.
What? What took him? Hazel, what happened?
They took Patrick. I couldn't hold on. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
As Hazel began to sob, Jason lifted her, placing her in his arms.
It's okay, Hazel. There's nothing you could have done. It's okay.
Jason held Hazel, his eyes not leaving the strange, unearthly pillar that stood there, long forgotten, lying in slumber for its master's call. And now it sleeps once more, my son, waiting. Waiting until the stars align once again.
Elder Sign was created and produced by Thomas McCain. It was written by Thomas McCain, Toby Riggs, and Lalandra Chrisman Stratton. Directed by Thomas McCain. Elder Sign is copyrighted under a Creative Commons license with not all rights owned exclusively. The voice of the narrator was David Zybert. The voice of Hazel Blair was Jasmine Jang. The voice of Jason Reed was Anthony Mendoza. The voice of Davis Long was Kurt Gardner. The voice of Patrick Sutherland was Brian Ault. The voices of Ethan Shimonic and Daniel Blevin were Jesse James Ziegler. Miscellaneous voices were performed by myself, Riley Queeton. Music was provided and approved by Peter Helland, Cryochamber Dark Ambiance, and Bong Ra. You can find the music of Peter Helland at his website at peterbhelland.com, or just check the link in the show notes. The many musics of Cryochamber can be found at their site, cryochamberlabel.com. Bong Ra's music, including songs performed by the Kilimanjaro Dark Jazz Ensemble and the Fuji Doom Jazz Corporation, can be found at their site listed in the show notes. Bong Ra's current project, The Thing with Five Eyes, can be found at the project's Bandcamp, thethingwithfiveeyes.bandcamp.com. Stay up to date with everything happening with the show by following us on Twitter or liking our page on Facebook. For full-time coverage on the show, you can also join our newsletter. All of these links are listed in the show notes below. Want to help the show grow? Leave a rating and share our show with friends and family. Next time on Elder Sign, we listen in on the dreams. Thanks for listening.